Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to another episode of It's All About Food. The It's All About Food podcast has been broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network since 2009. And we cover many, many topics about food. That's why this program is called It's All About Food. And personally, I feel that most of the world's issues are related to food. A lot of things can go wrong when people are hungry. And we're seeing a lot of that today. So we cover a lot of issues. We talk about health and food. We talk about ethics and food, specifically when it comes to the treatment of animals that are raised as food and the people that are involved in growing the food and working in the factories and slaughtering the animals. There's a lot of issues involved here, and they're not pretty. There's the environment, and there's too many things today that are related to the degradation of our environment and the growing of our food, primarily animals, to feed people. We cover a lot of things, and we cover delicious food made from whole, minimally processed plants. And we talk about biotech foods, frankenfoods, all kinds of things that people tell us we should be eating, but maybe aren't really foods. We cover a lot of ground on this program, and sometimes we're serious, and sometimes we're playful, and sometimes we're a mix. And today, I want to bring on...
Speaking of playful...
Gary DiMattei, that playful guy, and my co-host on It's All About Food.
Oh, Karen, well said. Yeah, so let's get right to it. Lots to talk about. This weekend, of course, we all know what that is in America, don't we? It's the weekend that we all go out and barbecue and celebrate independence of our country with food. All kinds of great foods
and
that people make.
We light fireworks.
Some of us do, but some of us can't. Like if you live in California, for example, no fireworks.
Yeah, but what have we been hearing lately?
Nothing but fireworks.
Nothing but fireworks. And all during the pandemic in New York City, we heard fireworks all the time. It's not even special anymore.
Right. So there are still companies making fireworks, even though they are...
illegal in states to buy them. Yeah.
And the interesting thing about fireworks is that they also scare animals. And we're here, as you just said, so eloquently to talk about the animals, to be a voice for the voiceless. And that's what this program is really all about. Yes, it's all about food, but animals are still commodities.
Animals are still considered as property and considered as potential food.
The animals that you have at home, the pets that you have, or these animals that maybe aren't your pets, maybe they're your neighbor's pets, a lot of them cannot handle things blowing up.
And it's not just animals. It's also young children and some adults don't like the sound of loud noises.
Right. But let's not even comment about what they can do with respect to causing a fire. And California is in a drought, as is most of the West. And so please don't use fireworks. Okay. And if you have to see fireworks, I'm sure there are a lot of fireworks displays that your city is going to be putting on in a controlled environment over oceans and things where the fish will then get scared.
Yeah.
Because people forget about fish when they shoot fireworks over the ocean. All of that said, why do we really need the fireworks? Do we?
Do we? Yeah, you know, it's the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air. We're supposed to remember the wars that we fought and are still fighting.
The wars that we fought and are still fighting for our supposed freedom. And are we really free? This weekend is a big celebration for our country, not just because it's the 4th of July, but a lot of us are starting to get back out there in the world.
Yeah, and it's a time to really celebrate.
Celebrate.
So many things. Not just, okay, the independence of the United States. There are a lot of issues there. It's just a nice day to have a holiday.
It's
in the summer. But we're all coming out and partying. And we've been through a lot these last few years. And we're growing, I hope, as a nation.
Right. And there's a lot of other celebrating going on. I mean, it was just Pride, right? Speaking of coming out, a lot of people are celebrating the fact that they are now out and free of all of the constraints that were put on them, and now they're celebrating that. So there's lots of celebrating going on.
Yes, when it comes to love, if you want to love someone, I support that.
Yeah, love whoever you want.
Yeah, if you want to blow someone up and hate them, I don't support that.
Right, and if you want to hurt an animal, we don't support that either.
We don't support that either.
And a lot of places are actually getting really hip to the fact that animals should not be commodities. For example, the Supreme Court.
So the Supreme Court just yesterday decided not to accept the meat industry lawsuit against California's Proposition 12. You may remember California's Proposition 12. It passed in 2018, and it's considered the strongest law in the world addressing farm animal confinement. And now, I'm not saying I'm in love with this law, but it may indeed be the best or the strongest that we have in existence. We have a long way to go. But what was interesting was the meat industry came along, and they didn't like the proposition. What did the proposition do? And it was approved by Californians in a landslide vote of 63%.
Ray, Ray, Ray.
63% is not 100%, but it's still
no.
more than 50. Okay. But what it did was it strengthened the existing California law to ban intensive confinement of egg-laying chickens, mother pigs, and calves that are used in the veal industry. And it also, and this is the key part, is that it prohibits the sale in California of eggs, pork, and veal from facilities that do confine animals in cruel cages that typically come from other states. So what happened was the meat industry came along and said, California can't tell other states what to do. And that was basically how they got around to challenging the constitutionality of California's Proposition 12. The beef industry was saying that this proposition reaches beyond the state's borders by prohibiting the sale in California of uncooked pork or veal from animals housed in ways that do not meet California's requirement. And they're saying, as a result, that a single state can't dictate the policy of
right.
other states.
And
right?
what did our Supreme Court...
And the Supreme Court just rejected it.
Nice.
Amen, thank goodness.
Even though it's absurd because we're talking about cruel cages and any cage in our estimation is cruel. But here's another exciting addition to that discussion. Turkey, not the gobble-gobble kind, but the country, has a similar thing going on. Their highly anticipated animal rights bill is expected to present it to the Turkish parliament and enact it into law in the coming weeks. And the new legislation will redefine animals as living beings instead of commodities. That law is supposedly going to pass. So the discussion now for the United States is, when are we going to arrive at the conclusion that animals should not be commodities?
It's very surprising that it's coming out of Turkey.
Yes.
Very surprising.
It aims to curb violence and incidents toward animals in that country.
Can we talk about commodities and animals as commodities and what that means?
Sure. Actually, I can give you a definition if
you'd like. A Wikipedia definition?
Well, I mean, isn't that where we always go for a definition? Is Wikipedia?
Yeah. When you listen to this, you'll see.
It's good entertainment.
I cringe when I hear this, but please, go ahead.
Commodity status of animals according to Wikipedia. The commodity status of animals is the legal status as property of most non-human animals, particularly farmed animals, working animals, and animals in sport, and their use as objects of trade. In the United States, free-roaming animals are broadly held in trust by the state. Only if captured can be claimed as personal property. Animals regarded as commodities may be bought, sold, given away, bequeathed, killed, and used as commodity producers. Producers of meat, eggs, milk, fur, wool, skin, and offspring, among other things. The exchange value of the animal does not depend on quality of life. The commodity status of livestock is evident in auction yards where they are tagged with a barcode and traded according to certain qualities, including age, weight, sex, and breeding history. In commodity markets, animals and animal products are classified as soft commodities, along with goods such as coffee and sugar, because they are grown, as opposed to hard commodities such as gold and copper, which are mined. Researchers identify viewing animals as commodities by humans as a manifestation of speciesism. The vegan and animal rights movements, chiefly the abolitionist approach of the 20th century, calls for eliminating the commodity or property status of animals.
I'm glad that's included in there.
Yes, it is.
What's amazing to me is that people went out of their way to actually put this on paper to document what a commodity is and what a commodity animal is and what their status is, and to write it down and then not feel what it is that they're writing when they write it.
It's actually, it makes you ill when you read that.
Makes me ill.
Yeah, makes one ill if one believes in the abolitionist approach of the 20th century, which calls for eliminating the commodity or property status of animals. Yeah, so it really does. It makes you ill.
It's chilling.
Especially if you are a believer in the abolitionist approach, which I am, which is the call for eliminating the commodity or property status of animals. I can't help but think that this was the template used prior to this for other species being enslaved.
And like humans?
I won't go any further on that because I am not, as they say, an expert. But I am a human, and I do feel that some of this needs to continue to be discussed, especially this when we're talking about food on It's All About Food. Now, yeah. There's a lot of religious things that go along with watching over animals, and many people have written in their books, their religious books, that we are supposed to take care of the animals.
Yeah,
right?
Well, the concept is we have dominion over animals, and that's the dangerous word. As I will remind everyone, I spoke with Jim Mason about a few weeks ago, the author of An Unnatural Order, and if you haven't read it yet, it's still on your to-do list. Okay?
Yes.
Okay. But this idea of dominion, that we have dominion, we don't have dominion. We shouldn't be in charge of anything. We can barely take care of ourselves.
And I'd like to add to that that based on what the Supreme Court has just upheld, is we're not doing a very good job of taking care of the animals either, because these cages are not humane. And
let's bring the meaning of humane back to what it really was meant to be.
Right, and never really has fully realized.
No, because humane, right, to me, means something very evil in its present form, to see what humans will do to other humans and to animals. What is considered humane can be pretty ugly.
Right, so on this Tuesday broadcast, the Tuesday before Independence Day, we're talking about things that we think are very important with respect to independence, right?
Exactly.
And if we're really going to arrive at true independence, we have to see what we're doing to the animals.
Now, I have a question for people. I haven't dug into it, but it's something that we just saw yesterday, and I wanted to bring it up because it's very curious to me. In California, the area is very dry. There's a big drought going on here all around the west of the United States.
Lots of dry grasses and lots of dry leaves and
twigs. Yeah, the hills are a beautiful gold, spotted with green trees.
It almost looks like the desert when you look at it from a distance. It almost looks like you're looking at the desert. That's how dry and brown and tan everything is.
Right, but it's not sand. It's
grass.
Grass that has dried. Okay, and a lot of people are being told to prevent fire hazards, to trim these dry grasses down, and to create all kinds of borders around pathways.
And roadways. Highways,
right.
And freeways.
So we were driving along, and we saw a herd of goats
Meh.
Oh, no, just tons of goats.
That's a lamb.
No, I think they do that too.
Bah.
Bah. Right. Yeah. who can make a good goat sound? Anyway, there were
tons.
How
of
many?
Them.
Hundreds and
hundreds.
Hundreds
and hundreds. 500, I think.
And
it
they
was.
Were eating this
were
dry
eating
grass
all of this
along
dry
the hill.
Grass. It was really just so surreal.
So I did a little Googling, and I learned that here in the Santa Clara Valley, the goats are indeed being used to keep residents and businesses safe from fire hazards. And the goats are kind of fenced into a certain area, and they're allowed to munch all day long. And then they get carted up and moved to another area. So I think, on one hand, it's lovely that the goats can help solve one of our big problems.
The hungry goats.
The hungry goats. But my question is, how well are these goats being treated? And I don't know the answer. I did read that when they're moved from one place to another, they're kind of pushed into a big truck and carted around. And I wonder what that's like. I'm sure it's not first-class accommodations in those trucks.
No, but we have a goat here to talk to you about it. Let's ask them a couple of questions.
Okay. Oh, we have Billy, the goat.
Hello.
Hello, Billy.
I don't like being carted around in a cattle truck. I just want you to know. And the grass is really dry and it sticks in my throat. And that's why I've got this problem. Do you understand?
I do. I'm so sorry to hear that. What don't you like about being carted around?
Well, I just don't like the people I'm with or the goats I'm with. You call them people, don't you? I call them my fellow goats. They're rude. They push. They shove.
I imagine as it gets hot, and it gets pretty hot.
Oh,
here,
it's so hot. It's
that
hot.
That when you're moved around in a truck,
yeah,
it's
just really hot.
Really hot. Okay, I'm sorry to hear that. But the real question is, and I'm sure you don't know the answer to this, Billy, is what happens to the goats that are sick or get too old, what happens to
yeah,
them?
Yeah, well, I don't even want to tell you because I lost a friend the other day, but I can't even go into it now. I really have to go. I've already said too much. Goodbye.
And there you have it. So I want to look into this a little more.
Thanks for coming, Billy.
But if anybody knows what happens to these goats that are being used in a wonderful way to help prevent fires, let us know.
Anyway, that was silly. That was just me being Billy, silly Billy. But the reality is we've looked at some articles and the pictures that they're showing are very pastoral. The goats are grazing on this green grass. It looks really lovely. But again, if you see the grass here in California, it is brown. It is dry. And I know goats are supposed to be able to eat anything. I mean, there's always these jokes around about how a goat will eat, you know, whatever, a tin can. But seriously, it doesn't look appetizing to me. Does it look appetizing to you? I mean, I'm not a goat. It might be just this huge feast.
I don't know. We need to dig into this.
It might be like eating roasted. What is the tea that you're drinking right now? It has the roasted.
I'm drinking Genmaicha.
It might be like eating a roasted.
Green tea with roasted brown rice.
Yeah, it might be something really delicious for
lovely.
The goat. I don't know. So if anybody out there knows how the goats are treated, if they're treated well, if they enjoy eating this grass.
I just wonder because anytime we have humans using animals for a purpose.
A commodity.
I'm suspicious.
Yeah, the commodification of animals, using animals to better the lives of humans. And my question for you is always this, are we worth it? Are we worth this? Are we giving back to the animals?
Yeah.
Are we giving back to the planet? Are we giving back what we take? Or are we just taking? That's my question. I don't have the answer to that. I mean, I can tell you from my own personal point of view that I woke up and decided I needed to give back. I needed to stop taking without giving back. And that's why I went vegan. Because I think in and of itself, the concept is not to exploit anything from animals. But when you're up against laws that say you can do these things to animals, as a matter of fact, humans that do these things to animals are protected by the law, meaning that if someone tries to help the animals and it's not appreciated and it goes against the law, the person can be punished.
Oh, like the people giving
water to pigs on the way to the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
That's a classic story. or trying to show folks what goes on behind the walls of a slaughterhouse. You can get in trouble for that. Humans who use animals to make money are protected by laws. And that's crazy. The abolitionist movement that we hear a lot about is to stop the practice of using animals as commodities. Am I right?
Yes, you are. Great. To treat animals as persons, not commodities.
Right.
Persons. And right. A person doesn't have to be a human.
Right. That's the key.
Yeah. So I thought I might share a couple of questions that came in the last few weeks, because we get comments and questions, and I always ask you to send them to info@realmeals.org.
And we're really appreciative of it.
And I thought I would review some of them today. Why not?
Why not?
Why not? Okay, here's one. Comes from Jeff. Thank you, Jeff.
Jeff, thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. Jeff wrote, Japan is the country with the highest egg consumption rate in the world. They also have the highest life expectancy, a very low cancer rate, and one of the lowest obesity rates in the world. The Japan school lunch is strict. Everyone eats the same thing unless they have an allergy. Milk is served with each school lunch every day, plus fish, chicken or meat, noodles or rice, some type of soup, some vegetables, and some fruit. They rotate the protein like fish, meat, chicken, egg, or tofu different days. Do you think Japan is doing the right thing with their school lunch diets?
Very good question, Jeff.
Very good question.
Thank you so much.
So I can see how someone could come to this conclusion when they see that Japan is doing significantly better than people in the United States when it comes to longevity and when it comes to obesity. But I want to bring up some things that may not be obvious to the average reader of information like this. So to begin with, we're just going to talk about health for a minute before we even touch on ethics and environment, okay? We have to be reductionist here for a moment. And it is true that Japan has a very low obesity rate. I think it's like 4%, where it's over 40% here in the United States.
4% versus 40%.
Yeah, it's some crazy thing. And then they also live longer, a few years, than those of us in the United States, the life expectancy numbers that we have. And that could lead you to think they must be doing something right. I will say they must be doing something a little better than what people are doing in the United States, but not necessarily right. And I'm also suspicious. I don't know that I'll be around long enough to see it, but I believe that as the generations go by consuming more industrial food, the health of our future generations is impacted in a negative way. And I think those of us in the United States have been eating more industrial food, more highly processed food, a little longer than those in Japan. So I think they're kind of a generation or two behind us. And that's why they're a little healthier. But they're becoming more like us, unfortunately. And so we may see their health results go down in the next few generations. We do know that the Japanese that do come to the United States and eat like everybody in the United States, they don't fare any better than the rest of the people in the United States. Because industrial food, highly processed food, pretty much affects everybody equally badly. But the point is that in Japan, they get less calories. They get about 200 calories less than we do in the United States. They move more, they walk more. So they're doing things that are better for the body.
They're exercising, right?
Exactly. And they eat more vegetables.
Right.
At one point, before the Western influence, Japan always ate a little bit of animal products, but they were eating a very high plant diet.
Exactly. Well, didn't T. Colin Campbell talk about this in his study, not about Japan, but he called it the China study?
Yes, he looked at the Chinese. And the interesting thing with the Chinese is there are different groups all over China where some are eating more of a plant diet and some are eating more animals. But I think overall they weren't consuming near the amount of animals that we consume in the United States. But you could still see the impact of consuming animals versus the impact of consuming more plants on a homogeneous group of people.
Right.
And the outcome was that Eating more plants was healthier than eating animals. But what I want to say is that, okay, the life expectancy right now is pretty much in the 80s for people in the United States, for people in Japan and other developed nations.
Developed.
And I think we can live till 120.
Yes,
maybe
you
more.
Do.
120 with a quality life. This is not just longevity, where we're living a long time on all kinds of medications. No, this is a medication-free life where you feel good, you can do a lot of wonderful things, and then maybe at some point you get a little tired and you pass peacefully in your sleep.
Thank you, Jeff. Great question. Thank you, Karen. Great response.
Now, what I didn't address was the environment and the ethics. So we know that raising animals to feed people is a disaster for the environment.
Right.
It's causing air pollution, soil degradation. It's causing global warming. It's polluting our waters.
It's causing pandemics.
And pandemics. Very good, Gary. I almost forgot about that.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the birds you were just reading about. And I thought that was frightening. That where was it that people were being told not to put bird feeders out?
Yeah, I was reading this very quickly. I think it was in like places like Virginia and Baltimore and Washington, D.C. area that people are being told not to put bird feeders out because birds are just dying of something mysterious. And they don't want to encourage them eating from the same source that may be infected somehow. It could be the food or it could be the birds congregating together and sharing something. We don't know.
There are these pandemics that many scientists feel are being caused by our treatment of animals and the way we grow animals for food.
And the way we
confined spaces.
Keyword, confined.
Right. And so that's what this program is about today, is to talk about the Supreme Court upholding this law from 2018, but what is this law really, and does it need to be addressed? I mean, because it's still confining animals in small spaces, correct?
Yes, it's going to take a long time.
Or it's going to take everybody to go vegan, which is why
we're
here.
It's going to take a lot of people going vegan.
Everybody.
And you know, Gary, I'm here to make vegans.
That's why we're here. We're here to make vegans. We're talking about the animals being used for food and how wrong that is in our estimation.
Yeah, exactly.
We grow a lot of vegetables. We grow a lot of corn, for example, and we don't feed it to humans. We feed it to animals. And we could redirect that and feed the entire world with what we grow to feed animals to then feed people. I keep talking about this and thinking about this. It keeps me up at night. I don't know why we haven't connected these dots. Or maybe it's because animals are a commodity and somebody is making a lot of money off of continuing to grow and sell animals for food.
Very good.
What do you think?
I like the way you think.
I learned that, hey, the amount of food that we grow to feed animals could feed the entire world.
We could feed the entire world right now, period, with the food that we have. The problem with feeding people is a distribution problem.
Right.
But we keep being told, we keep being marketed that we need to have genetically modified foods, or we need to have monocropping, and we need to have industrial agriculture to grow the quantity of foods that we need on this planet because people are starving. And that's wrong. People are starving because of politics and poverty.
And money is being made.
And we can grow plenty of food for today's population and plenty of food for future larger populations. Although I personally would hope that the population on this planet doesn't get bigger.
Right. That's just a personal feeling.
A personal feeling. Okay.
Right.
So I wanted to mention another comment that came in recently. And this one was from last week, in fact. And it was from Chris, who writes, caught a bit of your fun chat show on PRN. Do vegans realize that you can't grow crops without either animal manure or fossil fuel-based fertilizer? Are your vegan shoes made with fossil fuels? Sustainable ag is all about soil building via perennial grasses on which livestock can graze and animal manure. Let's focus on the real problems, industrial agriculture and processed food. And I smiled.
Thanks,
Chris. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for the note. We'll take all notes and we'll read all notes on the air, even if they're notes that don't agree with us, because that's what a conversation is all about.
Yeah, we like having a conversation. So I believe with all my heart and soul that we are focusing on the real problems. We are focusing on industrial agriculture and processed food. We do that. We've been doing it since 2009, since this right. show began. But let's talk about some of the things that Chris mentioned. Chris says we can't grow crops without either animal manure or fossil fuel-based fertilizers. And that's not true. In fact, we've had a number of programs on this show. One of them was specifically on something called veganic agriculture.
I remember it well.
And there's more veganic agriculture happening all the time. Some by people who are actually vegan and want to grow without any animal inputs. But what I learned from that first program we had on veganic agriculture, which was years ago, is that there were actually some places, like in Europe, where they didn't have access to animals. They weren't raising animals, but they still needed to grow crops. And so they figured out how to grow crops without fossil fuel fertilizers and without animal inputs. You can do it easily.
And that's the key word. You can do it easily, probably easier than you can raising animals to get their manure. We'll have to put the link up to that program.
Oh, I definitely will. And then another one was with Will Bonsall, and we talked about radical self-reliant gardening.
Right.
And he's a big proponent of veganic gardening.
Exactly.
But he will admit.
What will Will Bonsall admit?
And I'm pausing before I say this. He composts his own waste.
Now, hey, that's a great idea.
It is a great idea, and it is happening in different parts of the world where they need fertilizer.
I was hoping you'd bring that up because that was on my mind, and I remember now that Will talked about that. What a great idea. I saw the movie The Martian, didn't you?
Right.
And he grew potatoes by using his own poop.
That's right. You need to compost it properly.
Of course. Composting's a thing now in a lot of places,
yes.
Right? We're now starting to realize that our food scraps, and we're vegan, so our vegan food scraps are all veggies, are going to go to help grow food.
Exactly.
Right? So that's wonderful. And you have to talk about my favorite part of your message back to Chris, the wine part, the Quercetera part.
Oh, exactly. So one of our favorite wines is by a company called Quercetera.
Yes.
It's in Tuscany, Italy. Such a beautiful place.
And why is that such a cool place?
Well, it is veganic and biodynamic and organic. All the words you want all in one. The thing about their biodynamic portion of it is they follow biodynamic principles without animal inputs, because biodynamic typically
right.
uses bones that they put in the soil and a variety of other things. So they do everything that you normally would do in a biodynamic process with excluding the animal input.
So they call it vegan dynamic?
Veganic or? Biodynamic.
Veganic. Okay. You interviewed the founder,
Sebastiano Cosia Castiglioni.
Yeah, so we'll have to include that interview.
Absolutely.
On the page as
and
well.
One of the things we've noticed about that wine is you drink it and you don't feel bad the next day like some wines make you feel.
It's a wonderful wine, and again, it's called Quercetera. It's translated beautiful oak.
That's right.
Quercetera.
So then another statement was made about leather and mm-hmm. how vegan shoes are made with fossil fuels. And it's true that many vegan shoes have been made with plastic, which is derived from petroleum, fossil fuels.
Right.
But more and more, we're seeing some very creative entrepreneurs who are making leather-like material from mushrooms,
yeah,
Gary's favorite.
And pineapple.
And pineapple. And many other plants are being used to make textile material and leather-like material.
And they're very successful. And not only that, they're very fashionable. A lot of people used to complain about the fact that vegan shoes or vegan clothes weren't fashionable. Well, the fashion industry is catching on as well, and they are pumping out some great vegan clothes and vegan shoes.
And the processes are not as toxic.
No, not at all.
And making leather from animal skin is a very toxic process.
Thank you, Chris. I hope you enjoyed the response, and we'll come back and listen to more programs. Perhaps you're listening today and you have another question, send it in to info@realmeals.org. That's info@realmeals.org. We want to hear all of your questions, so please send them in. Now, another thing that I wanted to talk about today was you had mentioned in our conversation just now, a lot of these prescription drugs that people are on because they claim they have ailments and they need prescription drugs to get over these ailments. One of them that I keep hearing about is diverticulitis. And do you consider that disease food related?
I do indeed.
Because I know a lot of excuses people make to us is that they can't go vegan because their bodies can't handle the vegetables. They can only eat meat. They can only eat cheese if they ever try it. They have diverticulitis. They have...
People will come up with lots of things. They'll say that they have irritable bowel syndrome.
Right. What are some of the common complaints about people when we talk about going vegan? They immediately say...
They'll say that eating vegetables or eating beans will give them lots of gas and make them bloated. Okay. And a lot of doctors, a lot of medical professionals will tell you not to eat fiber, not to eat a high fiber diet when you have some of these problems, when you have bloating, when you have gas, when you have IBS or Crohn's, and even diverticulitis. They recommend foods low in fiber. And this, according to the medical professionals that I follow and believe in, is the wrong advice.
False.
That it's fiber that we need in our diet. Fiber is a critical nutrient that is lacking in so many diets. But it is true that it may be very difficult if you have been on a low fiber diet to start consuming fiber. And you have to be careful. So you need to start slowly.
Right.
You need to slowly add fiber into your diet. And what does that mean? What is fiber? I'm not talking about adding
Metamucil
or adding psyllium husks. I'm talking about real food, real plant food, because all real plant food has fiber.
Carrots.
So a good thing.
Celery.
Carrots, celery, onions.
Lettuce, onions.
Blueberries,
mushrooms.
Fruits. Lettuce, all the good foods. And beans and legumes.
But if you've had a diet of no fiber or very little fiber, eating a bunch of fiber is going to trigger.
Yeah. And so some people will tell you they can't possibly go vegan.
Right.
Because they have one of these conditions and they can't consume fiber because fiber makes them so uncomfortable.
And what you're saying is you have to give your body time to adjust.
You have to adjust, exactly, and create the bacteria in your gut that's going to properly digest these foods.
Microbiome?
Yes, you have to work on that precious microbiome.
That's a fun word to say. Let's say it together. Ready, everybody out there?
Microbiome. Or if you come from somewhere else, you might say microbiome.
Oh, microbiome is fine too. But you have to tend that garden in your gut.
Exactly. And how do you do that? Now, some of the recommendations are to drink green juices, drink vegetable juices that have little or no fiber in them.
Right. Good point.
And this way you're getting a lot of nutrition without upsetting your very sensitive gut that is sensitive to fiber.
We talk about green juice on this program all the time.
This is one of the things that green juice can definitely help heal a troubled gut. And so as your gut is healing from all these wonderful nutrients that you're taking in, then you can slowly introduce some fiber or more fiber. And the best way to do it is with a high-powered blender.
Right.
So you can cook the crap out of your food.
Cook the crap out of your food. What?
Cook your vegetables a lot and then puree them into a nice soup puree, and that will help you get fiber in your body that's easier to digest. And then you might graduate to consuming some raw fruits and vegetables that you blend
like smoothies,
like in smoothies.
And, you know, a lot of folks put, I know we are two of the folks that do this, vegetables in their fruit smoothies a lot of times, and it makes it really wonderful.
Yes. Vegetables are important in a smoothie. Occasionally, we'll make a dessert or a treat, which is just fruit, like bananas and berries, to make kind of like a sorbet or a ice cream of sorts. But these blended salads, as some people like to call them, should indeed have a lot of vegetables in them. And the fruit just makes it more palatable.
Yeah, it's really great.
But blended is the key when you're having a problem with fiber. And then I like to remind people of this. When you're having one of these shakes, one of these smoothies, don't guzzle.
Right.
They need to go in the mouth. And you literally need to chew, masticate in the mouth. Why? Because we have digestive fluids in the mouth that most people don't take advantage of.
Because they're just...
And you know, I'm salivating just talking about it.
Right. Because they're delicious. These smoothies are really delicious.
Yeah. So that's the key. Green juice and then blending your foods, introducing them slowly. And then there are the legumes.
Right.
And people really suffer with legumes, especially if they haven't consumed them. And it's the same thing. They need to be soaked overnight and maybe even 2 or 3 nights where you soak them, rinse them, soak them, and do this like 6 times every 12 hours.
Right.
And then cook them and cook them really, really well.
Now, this is if you're taking dried beans and soaking them and rehydrating them and cooking them yourself. What about if somebody doesn't want to go through all of that? Do you recommend canned beans?
Canned can be okay.
Right.
They're not as good as buying them yourself. I like the ones that have no salt.
And organic.
And organic.
Right. So look at the labels. Make sure they have no salt and make sure they are organic.
And that might be an easier way to start. And the way to do it is start with one bean.
Right.
You eat one bean and go on with your day and see how you feel. And if you're okay, the next day, eat 2 beans.
Right. And how are some of the ways people can get their beans? I'm asking a question that I'm going to answer.
Okay.
Some of you out there are thinking, you know, I don't want to eat beans. I've never eaten beans. But maybe you've eaten hummus. And hummus is classified as a bean, correct?
Yeah.
It's so
hummus. Hummus is the word for garbanzo bean in Hebrew and Arabic, I believe.
Right. So maybe you want to take a little small, start with a little bit of hummus. Most hummus that we eat is vegan because it's just made with a little tahini, a little lemon juice.
And oil.
Some do, some don't. And if you don't want the oil, make the hummus yourself. Buy some garbanzo beans and add some tahini to it. And a little lemon juice, and it's really great.
It's really good. You could also add some other things to it to flavor it up. Add a little cumin to it, or maybe add some roasted red peppers.
Right.
I like mushrooms.
Yeah.
With my hummus.
And you can make hummus out of a lot of different beans. You don't have to just use garbanzo beans.
Okay, well, that's when people call it hummus, but it's not hummus anymore if you don't use a garbanzo
right.
bean.
But it's a bean pate or a bean paste or a bean...
Yes, a bean puree, a bean pate. Yes, white bean puree, pate.
Black bean puree. And if you want to get a little more daring, a little more adventurous, you could add some roasted garlic to it. You could add some roasted onions to it. And remember, when you roast garlic and when you roast onions, they have this real sweet, creamy... wonderful flavor, and they lose all of the pungent garlic breath residue that people are afraid of garlic about. So when you roast it, it takes all of that out. It's really good, and I'm getting hungry too, just talking about it.
I know, right? Yeah, so back to diverticulitis and diverticulosis.
Yes. Get back to that.
You mentioned it, so I thought I would just bring it up.
It's important to talk about because so many people that I talk to, Karen, during the day about why they can't go vegan all drop the D word, the diverticulitis word. And so...
Yeah, so it's not really clear why it happens and it can cause a lot of pain. And I know that some people are advised that they can't consume nuts and seeds, which is a crazy myth that has never been verified. Somebody just came up with it, and a lot of doctors have been telling their patients, oh, you have diverticulitis, you can't have nuts and seeds. That's a myth. The way to heal from this, I recommend going to Dr. Furman's site, and right. He has a number of pages on diverticulitis and diverticulosis, and a plan on what to do and how to get there.
An action plan.
I love his site because he comes up with action plans for all kinds of ailments. The thing is, the action plan tends to be very similar for each one because all ailments, I think, are the same. They just come from bad diet and they affect people differently.
So what do you think the real reason a lot of folks don't want to go vegan? Do you think it's because they just don't want to give up the foods that they are comfortable eating? Or do you think they're afraid that they're not going to get enough protein, or a combination of the two? What do you think it is?
Yeah, it's a question that I don't know that we'll ever know the answer to. Humans are kind of crazy complex. I know in the United States, for example, I was talking to you about this the other day. We have this personality, we have this character, many of us in the United States, that we should be able to have whatever we want whenever we want it.
Right.
We are entitled. And I always notice that when Americans would go to France, for example, and this is probably less so today than it was a few decades ago, but the chefs were presenting their art, their right. food.
Right.
And if you asked for a substitution or a change, many of them would be very annoyed.
Sure.
And Americans continued to push this button saying, I want it my way, not your way.
Right.
And sure, I know I did it too, because I didn't want flesh and I didn't want dairy. So I would go to a restaurant and say, can you make me this? Fortunately, a number of chefs were like delighted and they're like, yes, I'll take the challenge. But I think there's a difference between feeding people food so that they take care of their hunger, and any restaurant may be in the business to just feed people with food that is tasteful and they make a profit from it. But then there are other places where the chef is really creating something that's art.
Absolutely.
And I think we should recognize the difference between the two.
Absolutely. And one is a chef and the other is a cook. And when you go into a restaurant where a chef is going to prepare your meal, you should resign yourself to the chef, especially if it's a vegan restaurant. But if you go into a restaurant where there's a person in the kitchen who is open and receptive to the challenge of someone wanting something a little different, then that's the difference to me. And we call cooks in this country chefs.
Ah.
And they're just cooks.
Yeah.
Because a chef is an artist.
Exactly. So I'm trying to come up with the difference between two different scenarios. I know a lot of people have been talking about this restaurant in New York City called 11 Madison.
Right, the one that is reopening as a vegan restaurant.
So this was a very high-end restaurant. It was very expensive to go to, and the pandemic came along, and they decided to use this time to come up with something new. And they are opening again as a completely vegan restaurant, and it's still very expensive. And some people are outraged that such a restaurant can exist and charge so much. And I've been thinking a lot about it because it's been, I don't know, eating away at me. And this is what I've come up with. Yes, we understand that there are a billion people on this planet that suffer from
malnutrition
and food insecurity, hunger, and many of them are children, and it's a disgrace. And feeding people is important, and feeding people healthy food all over the planet, included in the United States, is something we need to be doing a better job at. And charging tons of money at a restaurant doesn't seem to be in line with that. But I don't see this restaurant as something for the masses to use as a way to satisfy their nutritional needs.
Right.
I see this as an event or performance art. Like right. going to a Broadway show or going to the opera, those tickets are outrageously expensive. Again, not everybody can go to them, unfortunately. Some of the theaters offer some reduced price tickets so that people that aren't as financially endowed can participate. But still, those are expensive events. And I see this thing at 11 Madison as the same thing.
Right, as an event.
As an event, as performance art. I read a review recently, and I was really interested in reading how they prepared food and the combinations they came up with. It was kind of seeding some new ideas, but right. it was art.
Right. And if you're going to put, you know, the focus on something, I'd rather have it be a vegan extravaganza than something that features lots of cooked flesh.
Absolutely. Isn't it wonderful?
It's putting the spotlight, whether it's controversial or not, it's putting the spotlight on this restaurateur taking a chance and going vegan in his restaurant. And I'm not sure if he calls it vegan, may call it plant-based. I think it's really a good thing because it saves animals. And that's what I'm all about. And that's what you're all about, is saving
exactly.
the animals. As best we can, one mouthful at a time.
Now, there's a reason why the dishes cost so much at this place. Because some of them take days to prepare.
Sure.
Literally.
Yes.
And many people don't want food that's that complicated.
No. Where was it that we were listening to someone say, well, we only eat 10 dishes a day. Why should I buy a cookbook that has 600 recipes? And, you know, that's the attitude of a lot of folks. They
know how to make 5 meals. They know how to make 10 meals. And that's
and they like
that's
the
okay.
same food. And when they go out, it's funny, but they want to eat the same food that they eat when they're at home. So when I go out, I want it to be an event. And when I go out to a vegan restaurant, I want it to be an event. And this sounds like an event that I would save my pennies to do.
Yeah, maybe one time we could actually indulge.
Well, like a lot of people were saving up to see their
Hamilton.
Hamilton, their favorite Broadway show.
They and those say, tickets were expensive.
Very expensive. It's an event that a lot of folks might want to save up for. I know I'm one of them. So.
And there you have it.
There you have it.
So I just kind of wanted to give a different point of view on that.
Yeah, and hopefully you'll consider this point of view outrageous and disgusting, and you'll write us a really nasty email and we can read it on the air.
I would love that.
Right?
I would.
We could give them a great response and we could keep the conversation going, because the bottom line here is go vegan. Everybody, go vegan.
Go vegan, everybody.
All of these conversations we're having about the size of cages and veal crates and the commodification of animals, blah, 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 would all be eliminated if everybody realized and connect the dots that exploiting animals for food is not really hip anymore.
And like my dad used to say, if you can't solve the problem, eliminate the problem.
Right.
Now, my dad was not a vegan and he did enjoy consuming animals, but putting that aside.
Right.
The problem is exploitation and we need to eliminate it.
Exactly. Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. And we began the program talking about the 4th of July and fireworks, which we don't encourage. But there are fun ways to celebrate Independence Day. I also want to mention that it's Gary and my anniversary on July 4th. So
oh,
we'll be celebrating.
Oh, she remembered.
And there's lots of wonderful foods that you can carefully barbecue. And
and we have a great video, which I've mentioned last week, on our website, the Swingin' Gourmets barbecue video.
Yeah, and I personally love my fruit tarts. I have a raw fruit tart and I have a similar version that's baked that has fresh strawberries and blueberries on it and a cashew cream underneath, and it looks red, white, and blue, and it's colorful and stunning.
I hope you make that for me.
I know, I'm thinking about it now.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, it's so yummy.
It's very patriotic, and you know, strawberries are now in season, as are blueberries and all of the fresh fruit. We recommend you go out and eat as much fresh food as possible, and this is a great way to do it.
Yes, and one more word about fresh fruit.
Can we say fresh fruit?
Fresh fruit. One more word about fresh fruit.
That's two words, but go ahead.
Oh, that's right. Eat fresh fruit. Don't be afraid of fresh fruit. You can eat as much fresh fruit as you like, and berries are the best. Eat your berries. They're in season now here in the United States. Maybe not where you are, wherever you may be. But when they're in season, eat them.
Yes. And if you have fruit trees and you don't go out there and pick the fruit, think about picking the fruit and giving it to a friend. I saw someone on Facebook the other day ask people, hey, those of you that have any apricot trees, if you want to get rid of your apricots, I want them because I want to make apricot butter or apricot jam or whatever they wanted to make. And that's a really great idea. Go out there. It's great exercise. Pick that fruit off the tree and give it to someone because they'll put it to good use.
We'll take it.
I'll take it.
Hey, Gary, thanks. Thanks so much.
Happy 4th of July and happy Bananiversary.
Happy Bananiversary to you.
Hey, everybody.
Have a delicious week.